Welcome in the first VR talk, and I'm very happy to welcome Pierre and Ertu both from Metaxu. And tonight we have the wonderful digital and moderator, Isabella. Isabella obtained a BA in history and art design in 2019 and award and museum curating at the University of Sussex. Our focus for our studies is on feminism, queer curatorships, looking at the way museums and galleries can be more inclusive to all.
And I'm really excited to introduce to you Pierre, who's going to be our speaker tonight. Pierre is the co-founder of Metaxu Studio, a design practice helping people to take advantage of immersive technology in real-time 3D graphics. From architect and 3D visualizer to entrepreneur, Pierre has developed a deep understanding for the virtual reality industry. He has also obtained a PhD focus on spatial cognition in immersive learning environments. As a self-described B-architect, Pierre takes pride in designing meaningful architecture and enhancing people's spatial abilities to navigate the metaverse. Tonight, we are so excited to be in conversation with Pierre, learning new ways of thinking about social VR and its relationship with architecture. Without further ado, I'll hand you over to Pierre and his wonderful presentation that he's prepared for us.
Great, thank you so much for the intro, Bill. Yeah, I'm very proud and very excited to this first one-of-a-kind talk venue here. It's a bit experimental, for sure. I don't know if anyone is with a headset here. Yes, someone, there we go, he's got some hands, so that's really cool to have back. Yeah, but actually, most of this work and most what I'm going to be able to talk tonight is made with my business partner, who is actually behind the camera tonight. The point of the talk is really to explain a bit how we arrived to venue and how we came up with this kind of design in the metaverse. All starts where really I was into and when we had the first concept art of the cyberspace and time. So this is stepped out from the Tron. Actually, and then obviously, you know what it went on this really neo-knee. Not sure we want to be really doing this at the time, but that was what Leo was giving us. So there we go. And then obviously, big romancer who coined the term, William Gibson, who coined the term cyberspace, with a small quote here explaining what the cyberspace is, a consensual hallucination experienced daily by billions of legitimate operators in every nation. So that was the start of this all, in a way. But then really, I was diving into this literature and this cyberspace, and then you see there is another one, which is Snow Crash, which is showing what Snow Crash would look like on the left. And later on, some other graphics more, maybe looking like dystopian cities. Is really in this kind of cyberpunk atmosphere. Is that really what the digital domain will look like? Isn't it that maybe some kind of looking more into what the material architecture will become in the dystopian? Maybe that's not really what we want to make out of the cyberspace. So another entrance is the time where we start to do learning about architecture is the Euclid architecture. That was in 95. It's got some really interesting push of what this architecture could look like, and obviously it would be something that evolve and adapt in the user interaction. So that was a big influence at the time. And Marcos Novak is obviously very much also, I really encourage you to read some text on this. He is an avant-gardist for sure. You could still read some text 20 years ago and barely understanding all the concepts. But if we look at the more fundamental theory from philosopher, well, yeah, just a bit more inspiration and maybe with some very, just a couple or maybe three concepts that would support, if you want, the way we could design this cyberspace or metaverse from Deleuze and Guattari in an amazing book, even reading just the introductions in that. It's all about the rhizome, compare the rhizome, tree. And just two other concepts, body without organs. I'm not going to go into much in this concept, but it's worth looking into what it involved. So now taking a different approach to this, looking more into the technology, and quickly going briefly to the, I don't know, probably you are familiar with this, or if you're not, just go quickly through it. So first head mounted display was in the 1960, then the first really experiment with proper head mounted display with motion capture, because it was hanging from the ceiling and was very dangerous to use. That was in 68. Then the first commercial virtual reality headset by the company from in 87. We see here, although this is an image from NSA, but really that was the hardware at the time. And they also, the hardware they use in the film, the Lawnmower Man, or what it's worth. There is some representation of some kind of cyberspace there, very psychedelic, I would say. Strange Days, always a good reference, not easy to find, actually, from the German DVD. And then we go to more the software side of things. In 97, the first VRML 97 standard, where we were doing our final year project, where we submitted a 3D interface, which I'm going to show you just a bit later. And then there is something there between the 97, 98, and 2010, where there is a no man's land into these standards. The VRML has been acquired and transformed by different companies, and then it didn't work out. So we have to wait until the 2011 for the web, which is the WebGL, and then the WebVR 2014, which led to the WebXR and Mozilla Hubs in 2018. I think it's important to talk about this because obviously we talk about the metaverse. It can only happen if it's all online, the internet, and the company has its own software that you need to download and that doesn't, they don't talk to each other. It's not, it's very rhizomic, but is it that's what we want to go to? No, we probably want to have something like the web, but especially accessible. And so that's a bit what we were thinking already in 1999, where we designed this library of the information age. Yeah, I'm just going to pass through that. And then the, during the, this break where there is no real software to go on with the VR and no real headset because it was very expensive until we finally had the first of this in 2013, I went on working as a 3D visualizer, developing all the skills needed to produce those realistic visual texturing, rendering, lighting, architecture. And at the same time, FTU went on to do architectural competition, the different office, and then also worked on the London Aquatic Centre, where he designed with very much detail the dives and all the back of the dives there, both. So this is definitely a project. And then we decided once we had the headset more accessible and once we had these WebXR and the standards, that it was time to get back together and to see how we can actually now really create this version, or how we see the use of architecture to create this idea. And so we're working together to in that sense, and we are creating the Metaxu Studio. And so really to get this, we are pretty good with the workflow we're using, where F2 is doing most of the design in Rhino. And then we bring the model into Blender to do the texturing and to export it as, and to optimize the number of polygons and to make it as light as possible for the web, because that's one of the constraints. Then we bring this to Spark, we do the mise en scène, so we bring the interaction, we bring the functionality we can bring into the apps and link to the standard of the WebX, and then we do this space all together. Maybe just before closing, just a closing thought, really look into is, okay, architecture, they've got a lot of constraints to build with the weather, so there is also a constraint in the real world. In the virtual world, obviously, there is no such constraint. The main constraint here is the weight of the files and the number of polygons. But then, actually, there is still one thing that's very important is all this human. And here we have our little avatars. If you have your headset, you obviously use your hands and you can move and you are feeling that you are in the space. I think that's really most important, is that whatever we do together, it has to be around the body and it has to work. The interaction that we can afford, which is our hands and the voice and the eyes. And yeah, that's good. We could talk about that, but I'm happy to answer questions. And
okay, my first sort of question regarding your presentation. At the very beginning of your presentation, we met with very static imaginings of the metaverse, very technological, not really representative of the world we know outside. But this space, with its curves and soft forms, shows how we engage with the metaverse in ways that embody the outside world. What's the importance of social VR's relationship with natural forms and the way it makes us feel when we're interacting in these spaces?
Yes, you're right. We are going for more organic shape here. I'm not sure how to work that. I think maybe the way to look into this is, why would we create rules like we are used to in the physical world? In the physical world, we have to work with the materials. So for hundreds of years, or probably for thousands of years, we were just building with like wood and really stiff material. And so the best way is to just put them straight and put them in the ground and bring this verticality. So yeah, this is the whole history of architecture, to build those spaces which are using some sense of some perpendicularity. And then once we have all the tools, digital tools we have, and we find ourselves into this virtual environment, and we are not constrained with gravity, we are not constrained with this materiality of technology. Yeah, it's very tempting to make things a little bit more fluid and organic. I think it's if we look at nature, most of what nature does is more this kind of organic shape. That's why we use the organic shape.
Something isn't in kind of parametric architectural design, more maybe ecological parametrical architectural design. Because when I saw first time visual on Instagram on Eventbrite, it was clearly parametrical architectural. So because of that, I was going to ask actually something same with the Bella. May I?
Yes, please. Thank you. So, Pierre, do you think is it important to build somewhere in the metaverse with the ecological parametric architectural design?
And do you think, do we need green on these metaverses? Even there, yeah. I am also coming from the Deleuze and Guattari perspective. So even this space is actually simulation, and it actually doesn't reflect our reality at the same time. But do you think we need green spaces in the metaverse?
Do we need green spaces? Yeah, definitely. We're taking the direction of not replicating what we can find in the physical world. I don't think we need to replicate anything from the real world. The real world is amazing, and the earth and nature is fantastic. So the best way to appreciate it is to just go out there. So no, and look, when you see the structures around here by artists in residence, ON, which are really organic, obviously, as you can see, and maybe this brings enough of an organic feeling that we don't need to bring more plants. No. You mentioned another thing, which is green. That's a whole other discussion about colors.
Yeah.
That's a very big discussion. And we have some debate with Ertu actually about the color. So here we took some, we had a go at putting some colors, as you can see around here. But yeah, I think there is a lot we can do with colors, and we still need to explore the best way to go about this. But yeah, that's, and to go back to the metric. Parametric architecture. Actually, this is right now, obviously, it's using curves and nerves, but at this stage, it is not parametrical. So it's very handmade, I would say. We're not using too many scripts to create these shapes, but that's the direction we could take if we want to generate more space like this.
Well, I wasn't talking about only, but maybe all these forms also looks like something coming from like the rest of the
I know it looks like, but actually it is, Ertu is a very conscientious designer, and he's not using grasshopper, but I'm trying to push him to do it. We'll get there.
It's we got there, we have still a problem about actually all those graphs because we have a limitation about the polygons.
Yes.
Okay, we already know CryptoWorks, but it is a space like Minecraft. But in Mozilla Hub, we, or in other space, accessible space, they are actually more giving more aesthetical idea to the users.
Yeah, I think that's something we probably learn to work with, is working with constraint. I think it's important to have constraint, to be honest. So I think we need to take whatever constraint we have and working light and being efficient, I think that will keep that constraint as quite valuable. Now, from there, obviously, we know that computers can always improve and getting better and getting stronger. We'll see how that evolves. Yeah. We don't know yet where we can go with all the...
It's all very exciting. Speaking of the way you're making this space, designing the space, on Agora's page, we are advertising your one-week bootcamp. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what we should expect from this bootcamp if people sign up.
Yes, so that's, that's what I think. It's really what we are talking about here, actually. I think there is and the workflow I mentioned a few last slides is really, if we can, we've learned a lot for the last 6 months to actually create those venues and those environments in a way that works on the web. And the idea is to share what we've learned so far and to show how we can use open source software for most of them, maybe not Piano, but Mender and Hubs and Spoke. They're all open source software, so anyone can use them. And the idea is really to share our experience and give the tools to anyone who's keen to create their own space and their own venue and invite their own friends and communities to join the metaverse.
Absolutely. And I know to so many of our artists who we represent at Agora, these VR spaces are so important in the way that they're able to show their work, especially during a pandemic and how we can interact. How does these VR spaces, particularly for artists, work, giving them the freedom to display what they want, curate their own work? Do you think that these are one of the best spaces for digital artists to showcase their own work?
So do you mean specifically like the platform Mozilla Hubs? Yeah, I think to be honest, there are a few platforms out there. Even I've tried a lot of them. There are still a couple that I still need to test. But for as far as my experience goes, it is definitely the one that is the most accessible because every platform has a learning curve. There is a lot of platforms like Allspace or VRChat that you have to download the software on the computer. You have to log in and then you have to learn to do the space. And then obviously if you want to bring your own assets in there, that's even more complicated. So in regard of all these, Hubs is definitely the most accessible and the easiest to use. To just show here, like I know here this image, you can easily manipulate any image. Anyone can actually bring an image or a 3D model in the space right now, which is quite an interesting thing. I invite you to give it a go. If you have a small JPEG, you can bring in the space.
Yeah, it's great. It's so accessible and really for all age groups. I've been reading up on your VR Santa space. How did younger people react and engage with the VR spaces that you created?
Yeah, so that's a great example. One that really was really, once we've done that, we would say, okay, this is really great. We need to, there is something exciting there. So just to give a bit of context, it was November, and then we met this other guy who said, oh, people cannot see Santa this year. Kids cannot see Santa. So maybe we could create an environment, a virtual environment, and invite them there to see Santa. So we did that. We created a contract and we created the whole experience. We designed the whole experience. It was like a 25-minute experience. We hired performer actors to play Santa and to play the elf that were welcoming the family. And so we sold tickets. And a family could have from 1 to 5 avatars. So they would go all together as a family. Probably most of the kids, they were on the experience of apps on tablet works pretty well. And so they were getting old, either on the phone, on the tablet, or maybe on PC. And they were able to say hello to Santa, have a conversation with Santa in space. And yes, that was up to 25 families. And obviously we had a lot of good feedback and a lot of happy kids to be able to really big motivation, big inspiration.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it shows how it could be both the learning space and the space for fun and connecting. And
I would love to invite you on my first exhibition in the metaverse.
If you have a link, you can actually just copy the link in the chat.
Okay, of course.
And then you can bring the link in the space.
Thank you so much. I have actually too many questions, but I don't want to bother anyone.
No, that's great if you have questions.
That's great. Thank you, because when I just discovered all this space, let's say, all these metaverses, I just follow Deleuze and Guattari, which is with the Rhizome, of course. And it is interesting because I just saw same idea on your space, which is me, and actually we are sharing actually, and we are living in the Deleuze century, definitely. Mm-hmm. And of course with Foucault and also others. But I'm wondering how we can actually decide all these buildings ethics. Do you think we need an ethical perspective about the metaverses, about those architectural designs?
Yeah, ethics is a massive question, and we definitely need to talk more about that for sure. But yeah, and the other question?
Oh, my other question actually, yeah, we are talking about the Rhizome in here, but at the same time, yeah, all this space also giving another dimension and another reality to the people. But we are at the same time experiencing with our bodies, with the VR. But we don't have any effect to the outside, but we can affect it by the outside at the same time, maybe in VR. So how do you see the body is not separating from the space? And we have one of the class actually, which is Deleuze and space. So we are looking all these experiences together. So body is important also. So how do you see for the future all these VR experiences related with the space and the
body? Yeah, I think that's a great question. One of the first, so we're running an event every month, which is, we call it In Real Time, and we're running that every last Tuesday of the month to actually, and we host an artist, and the idea is just to have an event where we can share this. So this space was the first, was used in the context of the In Real Time event. And one of the first we did was actually an exhibition from an artist who present photograph of queer women. And so we had these gigantic photographs of this nude model in the space. And that was also the theme there. It's really the question of the body in VR. I think it's a super important question. But my answer to that, or the way I see things, is I would love to, yes, there is that. Yes, we need to identify who's who. Which in this case, yes, we have a robot, so maybe we don't know who's behind the robot, or we don't know who's behind the avatar. So that's definitely something we need to look into. We can talk and we can maybe trust each other, but obviously, and this is a very private environment, so we can imagine how many problems we can have when we don't know who's who behind the avatar. So that's definitely a big question. But then on the other end, I think it's such an opportunity to explore how we want to represent ourselves in those virtual environments. So like for me, obviously, I love having blue hair. That's my avatars. That's my way of presenting myself there, my way of identifying myself. And I think it's a great opportunity that everybody could actually explore this and have different avatars, different maybe not identification, but different representation of themselves in different space. I would love to see that more. And if you navigate into VR chat is crazy, the way you can create your own avatars.
I'm not that much familiar, but when I was in a PNL in Venice, I just tried it was actually converting your body. And it was when I put those VR glasses to my eyes, I just was in the main side.
In the main side.
It is interesting because it was also giving a space for you to make
sets, and I have sets in my main size in the Biennale, in the exhibition. Because it is another discussion, I guess, about all these, about the experiences, of course. I have last question too, but I would love to talk more, so I want to come all your events, I hope.
I'll send the invitation soon.
Okay. At the same time, as I'm a master's student in architectural history, and what do you think for all these metaverses? What should we actually research as an academician or about all this space? What kind of topics do you need to discuss mostly in this era?
So my research that I started doing my PhD is really more looking into what can we take from the symbol that we've created through architecture. If we take about, I don't know, the door, the window, the columns, the arcade. And my research led me to actually try to evaluate, if you want, the effect of all these architectural elements on the way we behave in the virtual space. And so the architect element is the steps, the stairs. And we can see that it works pretty well to keep everyone into this circle. But then we can actually use those stairs to leave. So that's one element. And there is another one, which is the ribbon here. And if we follow the ribbon, there is at some point place where we can see that the ribbon is maybe lifting up. That can be used with clever design, and I think that's what we need to look into. And there is a lot of space out there in those environment that maybe are not so subtle and are just trying to replicate what's already in the material world. But we don't need a door here. We don't need a ceiling. There is no rain.
Yeah.
But we need gates to separate two space, or we need a window maybe to stop us to go somewhere else, but to see through. So yeah, this is the kind of thing that's
another thing in the Soviets. We have seen all these open spaces.
That's so great. Pierre, I was wondering if you could tell us a bit more about future projects for Metaxi. What's coming up next?
What's coming up next? So what we are really trying to do is, well, what we're working on is actually, so we call it Meta 5. There is 5 arms, and it's great to host an event where we can have different artists that show their work. But we are working on smaller space, and we decline them as meta 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And so, because each one, like one arm, two arms. And so we're working on this smaller space. And the idea is that we would like to arrive at a point where we can propose, in a way, those space as templates. And so they can be random, or we are actually looking at what's the best way to go about this, because obviously nobody needs to. But yeah, that's why we're exploring the possibility of creating those venues as templates that can be used by other artists or other in different use cases, actually. It could be art gallery or other event, or maybe, I don't know, anyone that wants to create some event and show their work.
So much possibility for these spaces.
What do you have in mind?
I'm going to have to think about that. But very exciting as we're partners, Agora and Metaxi partners. I'm sure we'll be working together very closely in the future. Does anybody else in the audience have any questions?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for such a wonderful, insightful talk. And where we can really experience firsthand what it's all about and learn about architecture in the metaverse. Thank you so much. And Ertu, thank you so much.